a Birdificer creation.
Welcome to episode 145 of the Let's Talk Apple podcast. I'm your host, Bart Bouchot, and this is the show for September 2025. September is pretty much the opposite of the silly season, so from a month of very little real news of substance last month, we move into a month with massive amounts of very substantial news. So without further ado, let us get stuck in. We are going to visit just one story from last month for a quick little update. In this case, it is the ongoing saga of the UK government's super secret fight to break iCloud encryption. Again, it is literally illegal for Apple to admit that they are having to fight this in the super secret court in the UK. So we have no facty facts. What we have is yet more credible reporting from the Financial Times out of London, who have been our source on pretty much everything so far. Where last we left the story was that the US media was, or not just the US media, the media in general were largely reporting that problem solved, mission accomplished, nothing to see here because Tulsi Gabbard tweeted that Apple had dropped their outrageous demands against US citizens. Now, I immediately flagged that Tulsi Gabbard had been very careful in her words and had only mentioned US citizens and US citizens' rights. And while most of the media went off on a whole big, well, problem solved, nothing to see here, I was very cautious. And just as we went to record last time, we got a little update from the Financial Times saying that, well, actually, if everything is over, why is there a court date still scheduled for January? And now we have a little bit more detail. There is indeed still a case going on here because the UK government have altered their Technical Capability Notice, or TCN, under the Investigatory Powers Act, which has the very pleasing sounding acronym of IPA, but there's nothing pleasing about it. This is the so-called Snooper's Charter, and this is the law that lets the court basically issue secret orders that it's illegal for companies to even admit they have received. And they have amended their order. They're not looking for a back door into all iCloud encryption everywhere. They're looking for a back door into iCloud encryption for UK citizens. But while this gets around what they promised to the, what they apparently reportedly promised to the US administration, and this in no way contradicts what Tulsi Gabbard said on Twitter, this doesn't really change the fundamental mathematical problem here, that once you break encryption, you break encryption. There is no backdoor for some people. Some of the time, you either have a backdoor or you don't. There either is one or there isn't. So while this superficially sounds like less of an existential problem for iCloud security, really, very little has changed. And that court hearing that we have been led to believe by the Financial Times that is going to happen in January remains extremely important. And it remains very important for Apple to fight the good fight here. We're going to pay a very quick visit to our regulatory rundown section because we have so much more interesting news to talk about. But we do need to discuss some EU-related matters. First, story of note is that there is another Digital Services Act investigation opening up against Apple, Google and Microsoft, and this time it has nothing to do with privacy. It is to do with other aspects of that same rather large law, which says that online platforms have a responsibility to police their platforms to protect users from online scams and other malicious content. And no accusations have been made. What has happened is the European Commission have said that we are worried that these large companies may not be doing enough to protect their users from scams. Therefore, we are opening an investigation to determine whether or not they are. So that, I'm sure, will take some time to happen. But nonetheless, it is of note that the big three US tech companies are facing a new EU investigation about the Digital Services Act. Meanwhile, Apple have filed an official response to the European Commission's request for feedback on how the Digital Markets Act is going. One of the things that the Commission were supposed to do under the DMA was to get feedback after the Act had been, you know, in use for a while on how it's going. And Apple took them up on that offer. And it's fair to say that Apple don't think it's going very well. Apple actually released an unsigned but rather long essay on the Apple PR website giving their view. I'm actually going to quote a few choice segments from it because I think it's worth hearing in Apple's voice what they think the problem is with the Digital Markets Act. So, quoting Apple, under the DMA, the European Commission's interpretation of the rules is constantly changing, and that makes it nearly impossible for companies to know how to comply. The DMA's rules only apply to Apple, even though Samsung is the smartphone market leader in Europe and Chinese companies are growing fast. The DMA singles Apple out while leaving our competitors free to continue as they always have. Over time, it's become clear that the DMA isn't helping markets. It's making it harder to do business in Europe. It's become clear that the DMA is leading to a worse experience for Apple users in the EU. It's exposing them to new risks and disrupting the simple, seamless way their Apple products work together. And as new technologies come out, our European users of Apple's products will only fall further behind. So that's some snippets from Apple's longer statement. That's not one paragraph, that is a few key sentences spread out throughout the document. They lay out that there are indeed features which we have suspected are missing because of the Digital Markets Act. That really is why they're missing. Apple don't think it is safe to deliver those features because at the moment they can't securely and privacy protecting way allow their competitors to offer the same features, so they feel that under their interpretation of how the European Commission will interpret the Digital Markets Act, they can't bring those features to Europe at the moment. Basically, the EU Commission did not respond to this by saying, oh, thank you very much for the constructive feedback. They basically went, yeah, whatever, Apple can complain all they want, that's all they seem to do, and they're just going to have to comply. Which I thought wasn't a particularly helpful reply, but it's sort of what I expect from the European Commission, because the commissioners are, unfortunately, a little bit more political than they probably should be in an ideal world. And, yeah, I think Apple, I don't entirely agree with Apple, but I do think they're about 80 to 90% right in their letter. And to see the commission bat away legitimate criticisms is not nice. There are some good opinion pieces. Dan Moran has written an excellent piece over on Six Colors that I would completely agree with and suggest people have a read of if they have some time. And I also think John Gruber is insightful. He's quite cranky about the Digital Markets Act and always has been, probably more cranky than I am. But he often makes good points in between his invective. And I think something that caught my eye in his article is this little quote. If Apple just shipped all EU iPhones with Android instead of iOS, all their DMA problems would go away. How in the world would that increase competition? That's a really good point. Penalising Apple for offering a genuine alternative seems at odds with the spirit of the Digital Markets Act. Popping quickly into legal latest for a few little updates, a long-running case that I have felt was baseless from the start, that when Apple and Amazon made an agreement to basically to get the counterfeit junk out of the Amazon store so that it was safer to buy Apple things in Amazon. Some of those resellers got very cranky about having to prove they weren't selling counterfeit glop, and they tried to sue Apple and Amazon for price fixing. Because, well, if you don't allow fake rubbish, then maybe prices will go up. And so you can certainly find evidence that prices went up when the fake glop was ejected. I felt it was a meritless case all along. It's been going for many years now. It has just been dismissed. So it would appear that some actual judges with actual legal experience also agree with me on this one. Meanwhile, we learned last month of the very silly case of Elon Musk's XAI suing Apple because they're not pushing poor Elon Musk's AI hard enough in the App Store, and that must be somehow illegally wrong somehow. Well, Apple and indeed OpenAI have filed their responses. Apple was very Apple-y, very lawyerly in their stuff. They used words like speculation. This Elon Musk case is built on speculation. OpenAI just went for mockery. They just went after the math and basically went, this is absolute garbage. So if you want the more spicy take, have a read of the Ars Technica article in the show notes describing OpenAI's response. And if you want to see Apple's more measured response, the Mac Observer have good reporting on that. For the first time in quite some time, this segment, which in my show notes is always called Apple HR and Acquisition News, actually has some acquisition news, because really it's been just HR news the last, well, year or so. And part of that is because Apple have stopped telling us about most of their acquisitions, but we learned about one thanks to the Digital Markets Act, which actually requires large companies like Apple to report on any acquisitions they make above certain criteria. Which is why we know that an Irish chip firm, IC Mask Design, has been acquired by Apple. This would appear to be an acqui-hire for more talent. They make chips and stuff related particularly to AI. So again, it's all going to the Apple Silicon team, I'm sure. But perhaps with a bit of an AI focus to bolster the neural engine-y bits of the wonderful A-series processors, etc. It's a nice acquisition, obviously, with my, you know, living here in Ireland. It's nice to see an Irish company get acquired like that. I hope everyone involved is doing well out of that deal. And I'm sure we'll never really know how they've contributed. But if our Apple processors get a little bit better, it might be because of some Irish genius added to the mix. A name we have become familiar with thanks to the ever-present leaking from Mark Gurman is Robbie Walker, who gave a very frank discussion to employees about how Siri had failed, but he was nonetheless the engineer responsible for the failed Siri efforts. Well, I'll just get the headline from the Mac Observer. Former Siri head Robbie Walker to exit Apple after AI setbacks. That's the politest headline I could find, really. No detail, actually, in any of the stories I read about what Robbie Walker is doing next, but he is leaving Apple. Now, given that all of that org has been shuffled around, this isn't particularly surprising. In terms of HR news again, then, Apple is facing an unexpected lawsuit for religious discrimination against one of their, or the allegation is that they religiously discriminated against a long-time Apple genius after he converted to Judaism. When he did, he requested that he not be forced to work Friday and Saturday because of the Shabbat. And Apple went, yeah, well, that's not really a goer. And then they started to complain about his dress habit not meeting code, which I assume has something to do with either the headwear or facial hair requirements of the more, the more orthodox sects of Judaism. There's no detail on exactly which sect of Judaism this person converted to, but that shouldn't really matter. I mean, we're only getting one side of the story here, but it certainly, on reading, sounds like whoever is running that Apple store made a boo-boo. It sort of caught my eye in that normally it's not people converting to Judaism that suffer these kind of things. It's usually people converting to Islam. So that was kind of like, oh, that's interesting. And given everything going on in the world at the moment, I'm sure the Jewish community don't feel, or they certainly feel under some stress at the moment. So anyway, this is just a strange one. Meanwhile, I'm going to end here with some good news for Apple. The US National Labor Relations Board have withdrawn their claim that Tim Cook's email violated workers' rights. Tim Cook had sent some emails, I think it was about unions. No, sorry, it wasn't about unions. It was about secrecy. And initially the NLRB said, oh, you can't be telling people to keep their mouth shut about what they're doing at work. That's against their First Amendment rights. And under the Trump administration, that doesn't seem to be where the NLRB is going. And I honestly can't say, how terrible that they've dropped this case, because I don't think this really should have been a case in the first place. So, you know, just because I may not agree with the occupants of the office doesn't mean they're wrong. And I think this is one of those cases of, you know, low-level Trump administration officials doing low-level work in a perfectly normal way. And this just seems completely reasonable to me. Quickly visiting Apple services and original content highlights for the month. Let's start in Apple TV land, where award season is in good, you know, in full swing, or certainly starting to pick up. I guess it's only starting to pick up because we've the Oscars and stuff is early in the year, so we have a lot more of that to come now that I think about it. Okay, then this winter's new award season is starting to spin up with the Emmys. And I would say Apple have done well. So the first Emmys to be announced were the Creative Arts Emmys, which are the sort of the less famous-y ones. And Apple did well there. Apple TV Plus's Severance and The Studio got a record, apparently, for Apple, 15 Creative Emmy Awards, which isn't bad at all. And then came the quote-unquote real Emmys, and Severance and The Studio earned Apple TV a record-breaking 22 Emmys. So on the whole, that's not doing too bad there. Apple PR were very happy, released a press release. Apple's outstanding comedy, The Studio, sweeps as the most winning freshman comedy in Emmy history. And global hit Severance leads as most winning drama at the 77th Primetime Emmy Awards. Yeah, they're proud. I don't blame them. Apple TV Plus have secured a 10-episode follow-up to what was a very popular comedy show on the BBC here this side of the pond, the BBC's Gavin and Stacey. I don't know if that content is going to come to Europe, or sorry, to America, or if that's just something for Europeans, but either way, that's going to be very popular, I'm sure. And Apple have also released 7 new immersive films for the Apple Vision Pro, those 5 or 6 users, so they can explore sports, music, and culture. And in related news, there's not just Apple making new Apple Vision Pro content. Canal Plus, across the Littler Pond in France, have released an immersive documentary, MotoGP Tour de Force, which is about motor racing, so that seems very in keeping with Apple's recent big success with their F1 movie. Jumping very much back to the United States side of the pond, although to be honest, beloved across planet Earth, the Peanuts gang will have a home on Apple until 2030. In other words, the deal between the estate of the Snoopy artist, who's unfortunately no longer with us, have extended their deal with Apple. So Peanuts, Charlie Brown, and Snoopy and the whole gang will remain with Apple for another half decade, until 2030. And in very much related news, we are approaching the Halloween holiday. Therefore, It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, is available for free again on Apple TV, and there are instructions on Apple Insider on how to watch that without paying for it if you're not an Apple TV Plus subscriber, linked in the show notes. Popping briefly into Apple Music, we have talked a few times recently about the tool Apple have been working on to migrate, I think it's Spotify, to Apple Music. And last we heard, it had initially started off as a very, very small pilot in just, I think it was Australia and New Zealand, and then it had rolled out to a few more countries, and now it has basically rolled out to all of planet Earth, apart from 3 of the markets Apple is active in. That would be China, Myanmar, and Russia. Meanwhile, over on the Android side, some of the little tweaks to the various Apple Music apps on Apple's own platforms have become available on the Android version. Apple Arcade continues to get its regular dose of TLC from Apple. New games again in October. In this case, NBA 2K26 Arcade Edition is coming, and Apple made a big shout about that on their PR page. Apple News Plus also got a boost, I think, just for the American subscribers, although I haven't found confirmation of that, but I would assume that's the case. Either way, at the very, very least, American Apple News Plus subscribers get the Washington Post at no extra cost. And maybe Apple News Plus subscribers in other countries where the service is available got it too. I know it's not available in Ireland, and that makes me very cranky, because I would actually quite like some curated news in these turbulent times. Quite a few stories of note related to Apple Pay and or Apple Wallet. In both the UK and the US, Apple Pay has added Affirm and Klarna for in-store purchases. So they were available for online purchases. These are buy now, pay later services. They were only available for internet purchases previously. Now they're also an option for in-store purchases using Apple Pay. So that's certainly interesting if you need that. Tap to Pay, so that is receiving money via Tap to Pay on the iPhone, is continuing its rollout. A bunch more European countries are joining the club this month. That includes Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Monaco, and Norway. Another nice feature that I am looking forward to arriving on my car, because it is scheduled to come to Volvos and Polestars, is Apple Wallet Car Key. So Car Key for Apple Wallet. And while I don't yet have news about my car, what I do have is news that 13 more automakers have been added to the list of automakers that are working on rolling the feature out. They would be Acura, Cadillac, Chery, Chevrolet, GMC, Hongqi, Lucid, Porsche, Rivian, Smart, Tata, Voya, and WEY or Way. That is a mix of some very American brands, some distinctly Chinese brands, and some more generic brands. Finally, another feature in the Apple Wallet that I really wish more parts of the world would copy is Apple's Digital ID feature. They have released it as an open ISO standard. It is a very good, secure, and privacy-preserving way of sharing just the piece of information you need, like, say, just an assertion of whether or not you're over 18. It has so many advantages, but unfortunately, it is mostly, as far as I'm aware, is entirely confined to the United States, and even then, it's, at the moment, state by state. Up until this month, there were 10 states. You can now take that number to 11, with North Dakota joining the mix. Apple Health, small but, you know, important if you live in South Korea, update. Apple have been given the needed approvals, etc., to roll out their sleep apnea notifications to South Korean Apple Watch users. Meanwhile, Apple Sports have added the new widget for everyone, and they have rolled out to 8 new countries. They're all European. Couldn't actually find a full list because I learned about it through Apple PR, and I'm actually subscribed to Apple PR's RSS feed for Ireland. Part of me thinks, as a show host, I should also subscribe to the feed for America, but then I get all sorts of duplicates. Either way, I only know that it is a total of 8 countries because Cult of Mac told me it's a total of 8 countries, and I know from Apple directly that one of those countries is Ireland. The other 7, I don't know, but I guess you can install the app and see what happens. And finally, Apple's Apple Invites app has added a new calendar syncing and video playback. Two new features. So, I don't know, you know, it's a fairly nascent service, but it does seem useful. So that is another reason people may want to use Apple Invites when they're organizing a party. It is only available to iCloud Plus subscribers to host parties, but anyone on planet Earth can join your party. Yes, I have cleared the decks rather quickly of all the other stories because we have 3 really big main stories. Or rather, we have 2 really big main stories and one I'm cranky about even having to include, but I kind of feel I have to. So the first main story is one we're going to run through quite quickly. Unfortunately, I feel I really must give a little update on what's going on in Trumplandia, or the US under the Trump 2.0 administration, as it's probably better to call it. And then we get to have fun. First off, we get to have hardware fun, where only people who want to open their wallets get to play along, for the most part. And that will be the hardware announced at Apple's all-dropping event. And then we get some fun for everyone to play along with Apple's Apple OS 26 range of updates. I'm so happy they've unified the version number. It did make these show notes so much easier to write. Our first main story then is just a brief little visit to Trumplandia, as I'm calling it. And I know I didn't make that up. I learned that somewhere. I don't remember where. Kind of a fun name anyway. I was going to just throw this in the update section at the start of the show until I was forced to add a bigger story. So the little quick one, it's not clear really, but the president said he was going to put 100% tariffs on films made outside the US, but he didn't really give any detail because he doesn't do detail. And as best as I can tell from all of the reporting, nothing has actually happened. No actual tariffs have actually been applied, because to do that, you need to put through paperwork and rules and stuff. So everything's kind of up in the air, even though the president has said it shall be so. It isn't so, and I don't really know what it's going to mean, and frankly, neither does anyone else. So really, the headline is, it's not clear how badly Trump's 100% tariffs on films will hit Apple TV+. That's because nothing is actually clear, because it's just a social media post by the president. So it has no actual meaning. And then, had this next story not happened, I would really not have made this a main story, but I sort of feel this is one of those landmark moments. So Apple removes IceBlock, won't allow apps that report locations of ICE agents into the App Store. That is the rather neutral headline from Ars Technica. So this is a bit of a watershed, because Apple always do what is required by the letter of the law in the countries they operate in. And that means that in authoritarian countries like China and in authoritarian adjacent countries, India sort of skirts that boundary sometimes, and the Indian App Store is becoming extremely heavily regulated. And of course, Russia issues diktats to Apple all the time. But Apple comply with those, because in those countries, that's what you have to do to stay in those countries. And generally speaking, in democracies, Apple have obeyed the letter of the law. And when they have been asked by authorities to make, you know, to kick things out that are not illegal, but just unwanted by the people who happen to be in power at the moment, Apple will generally fight back, because they don't really do government censorship, they do compliance with the law. Which is why it is very noteworthy that this app has been removed. And I think it was John Gruber first flagged this rather key point to me, but literally no one, not even Attorney General Pam Bondi, is claiming that any aspect of the IceBlock app is illegal. So this is purely a, oh, we don't like this, make it go away, and Apple went, yes. Needless to say, I find that very noteworthy. Now, I at this stage have lost the emotional energy to really get too het up about the latest bit of insanity to come out of the US. So I just mentally noted, huh, well, I guess Apple users in the US now know what it's like to be Apple users in China. Cool. So I'm going to outsource opinion to actual Americans living in actual America here. And I'm going to start with the more spicy take from John Gruber. So again, John's first point is that none of this is illegal. So I'll skip over that sentence and just jump straight to, thus, it's not merely inappropriate, but outrageous. And yet another among dozens of other causes for alarm regarding Trump 2.0's decidedly authoritarian turn. For the DOJ to demand Apple do anything about it. But the mandate did, and comply, Apple did. Now, John does go on in his piece to say that he he doesn't necessarily think Apple was wrong, given the realities of the Trump administration. And he compares the Trump administration effectively to mafioso. And maybe Apple do need to pick their battles. And this isn't one worth picking their battle with. That is utterly debatable. I am mostly really glad I don't have Tim Cook's problem. I would not want to be a CEO in 2025 America. Not a nice job. For I think is an equally valid but much less spicy take, I also link in the show notes to the article from Dan Moran on Six Colors, because Dan makes a point that I've been trying to make long before things went politically skew ways in the US, just in terms of whenever Apple would do something that was good for their profit, but people didn't like, and they would get all hot and bothered about the fact that this company wasn't sharing their values. And I've always thought that was silly, because that's not what companies are. They're not people. They are effectively structures, right? They're just organizations. And so this quote from Dan Moran seems very apt. Do not expect corporations to be your proxy in the fight against authoritarianism. They are, simply put, not designed for it. They are machines designed to return profit to shareholders, and that means they fundamentally rely on a stability that you're not going to get from making waves. You will always be disappointed. Yeah, we used to be disappointed because of, you know, they wouldn't fight China hard enough or whatever. Now a lot of people are disappointed that they're not standing up to the Trump administration. It's 2025. This is where we are. I'm just happy I don't live in the US. I'm still darn worried about what's going on over there, because unfortunately I do live on planet Earth, and so I don't have the luxury of not actually caring, but I do have the luxury of it not being mine to fix. So at least I don't have a civic duty to do something, because there's literally nothing I can do. I don't get a say in how America's run. And of course, Tim Cook continues to do what he thinks he must to avoid the ire of the capricious president by attending, in this case on our side of the pond, a UK state dinner as a guest of President Trump. I'm sure it was very nice, and I'm sure it was lovely to be in Windsor Castle, but also having gotten in such probable consequences for declining an invitation to join the president in Qatar, it's interesting that Tim Cook decided to pop along to the UK to have a chat with King Charles along with Donald. Okay, enough of that. Let us move on to the happier main stories. Let us start with Apple's awe-dropping event. If you would like to watch the keynote back, you can get links to do that over on Mac Stories in the show notes. If you have a little bit less time, the Mac Observer linked to a nice little 2-minute summary recap of all the big announcements. Also, if you would like a recap but not in video format, Mac Stories have their, it's become a tradition of theirs to collect together all the bento box slides from Apple events. It is a very useful resource I find as a podcaster. And also, it's a great way to get a summary of what Apple thinks is the most important things they said. So that link is also in the show notes. Another thing I've started to do a lot more is to rely on Apple's own press releases to give me a sense of what Apple thinks is the most important. So this is not what I think is the most important, but I think this is revealing as to what Apple think they told us at this big event. So Apple do what they always do after these events. They don't release one big press release for everything, because that's not how attention works. So they release many, many press releases, often staggered over days after the event. I mean, some of the first ones come out within hours of each other, but then they can last for quite some time. And so the order of them is probably about as interesting as the actual titles they give them. And I'll be honest, the actual content, I don't tend to read that much of. I'm more interested in just the titles and the headlines they give in the sections, the things they put in bold. That sort of helps me make up my mind. So anyway, here are the titles of all of Apple's press releases related to this big event, and there's quite a few. Introducing AirPods Pro 3, the ultimate audio experience. Apple debuts Apple Watch Series 11, featuring groundbreaking health insights. Apple unveils iPhone 17 Pro and iPhone 17 Pro Max, the most powerful and advanced Pro models ever. Then, after the Pro, Apple debuts iPhone 17. Full stop, end of sentence. Introducing iPhone Air, a powerful new iPhone with a breakthrough design. Apple announces Final Cut Camera 2.0. Apple introduces Apple Watch SE 3. Introducing Apple Watch Ultra 3. Notice how those last ones don't have much fanfare, which immediately tells you that they are not giant big feature updates. The iPhone Air is a giant big feature update. It's a whole new product. And the iPhone 17 Pro and 17 Pro Max are clearly where Apple focused their attention, because the iPhone 17 didn't get much either. The Apple Watch Series 11, that got quite a bit of call out. The Apple Watch Ultra 3 and the Apple Watch SE 3, not so much. Obviously then, later in the month, because the awe-dropping event was early in the month, by the time the month was out, us regular folk could go open our wallets and buy these things and get them into our hands. We have one last press release. Next generation of iPhone, Apple Watch and AirPods Pro arrives in Apple Store locations worldwide. And with that, that is Apple's take on all of this new hardware. If you want all of the statistics and stuff, Mac Stories are doing their wonderful little roundup of Apple's September 25 event by the numbers. It's very useful if you're the kind of person who wants to know how much RAM and how many pixels and all that kind of stuff. So Apple led with their AirPods Pro 3, so let's lead there. So the headlines from various news reporting sites are things like AirPods Pro 3 arrive with heart rate sensing and best ever ANC, that's active noise cancellation. AirPods Pro 3 can run 10 hours on a single charge. So that was Apple Insider, followed by the Mac Observer. Then obviously the reporters who physically went can basically play with these things hands on. So, and they also get review units, of course. So we later then got from Apple Insider, hands-on, AirPods Pro 3 live translation and heart rate monitoring are compelling. Live translation is interesting because it basically lets you do that trick you hear in places like the UN, where you talk in your language and you hear in your ear translations of what all the other people say in their own languages. So you now get that same feature powered by AI in your AirPods. And it's not just the new AirPods Pro 3 that have this superpower. There are two other models of AirPod that are already out there that have sufficient computing power to do this trick. They would be the AirPods 4, but only the ANC, I think it's only the noise-canceling model has the power, and the AirPods Pro 2. And Europeans, thanks to the Digital Markets Act kerfuffling mentioned previously, are not getting this particular feature. This is one of the features that Apple is withholding because they can't allow competitors to do it without breaching privacy. Perhaps noteworthy to some, Apple have dropped the USB-C cable from the AirPods Pro 3 packaging, so yeah, just get your AirPods. And in terms of reviews, and the Cult of Mac do these nice reviews. Their review is basically a review of reviews, which is fantastically helpful to podcasters. So their review roundup has the succinct headline, AirPods Pro 3, a no-brainer upgrade. Moving on to new Apple Watches then. Almost, but not quite, all of the new Apple Watches are getting hypertension alerts. Not the SE3, it doesn't have enough oomph, apparently. As Apple Insider put it, Apple expects to notify 1 million people that they have hypertension in a year. And again, like with the live translation features, some existing Apple Watches do actually have sufficient computing power to gain this feature. That would be the Series 9 and Series 10 versions of the watch. So the 11 is where it was announced, and it goes back as far as the 9. The Ultra 3 is the new one that has it, and also the Ultra 2 can get it. Apple have a support document outlining the feature. They're not actually measuring your blood pressure. They're measuring sort of the features of how exactly your heart beats to detect when your heart is sort of pumping in a way that implies very, very strongly, with fully backed up medical studies to show that if your heart's doing this, you almost certainly have hypertension. Therefore, we will alert you, not that you have hypertension, but that you should get that checked out. And Apple are very, very clear that they are not measuring your heart, your blood pressure. They are not actually telling you, you definitely have hypertension. What they're doing is saying, hey, your heart rate data fits the profile for someone who does, so you should get that checked out, which is exactly the kind of thing you usually want, because hypertension is one of those diseases that doesn't really have symptoms unless things get very bad. I'm speaking, unfortunately, from personal experience here. If you have hypertension bad enough, you will start to get unpleasant symptoms like, say, nosebleeds that put you in hospital for a day, that kind of thing. But, you know, a lot of people can go for decades without knowing they have hypertension. So this is helpful. Apple had said that they were going to be needing various clearances within days of the keynote. They had it from the FDA in the United States, and before the end of the month, they also had it in Canada. Another thing, all of the watches, and I think this time it does include the new SE, in fact it does include the new SE3 this time, is sleep scores. So this is just putting a little bit more usable, actionable information around the sleep monitoring feature that has already existed, but it's basically gotten tuned up a bit to be more useful, better presented, more actionable, which is, I know a lot of people complain that what is the point of knowing that you slept badly if there's nothing in the output to help you not sleep badly? Because worrying about sleeping well is a pretty good way to sleep badly. Well, the way this score is broken down, it actually does give you some actionable insights. So I think, while I'm not saying everyone who thinks this is a silly idea is suddenly going to think this is a fantastic idea, it does seem like they're on a good track here. And again, like with the hypertension, it is also being backported to older devices. And in this case, it really, really doesn't need nearly as much fancy pants computing as the hypertension stuff. So in this case, it's going a long way back. So all the Apple Ultra models get this. And the regular series watches, everything as far back and including the 6. And in terms of the SE watches, the 2, but not the SE original. So that then, let's jump into the specific watches themselves, starting with the Series 11. So the headline Apple Insider give it is Apple Watch Series 11, hypertension monitoring and better battery in a familiar shell. The other thing that seems to get a lot of attention is Apple expands Apple Watch 11 with bold color palette. And again, in terms of review roundup, battery life is the biggest benefit, is the summary of reviews. Moving on then to the Ultra 3. Bigger screen, better battery life, new health tricks. One review of note that may be of interest to people is Apple Watch Ultra 3 versus Apple Watch Ultra 2 from Apple Insider. Same body, better screen. I would say that I am an Ultra Watch 2 owner. I don't find this a particularly compelling update. But that's fine, because my watch is also still fine. If I was an Ultra 1 user, I would be much more tempted. And if I was a Series 8 or Series 9 or Series 10 user, I'd be very tempted. So, you know, there we are. In terms of review roundup, excellent and much needed upgrade. You know, it's not dramatic, it's not unexpected, but it's not bad. You know, nicer screens are always nicer. I actually think that probably the most notable in terms of how upgraded it is the SE3. The sort of quick summary from Apple Insider, Apple Watch SE3 refreshed with modern design features and budget-friendly price. The thing that really catches my eye is that this is the first SE watch with an always-on display. And when you look at the reviews, you see, I think Cultamac captures it well, Apple Watch SE is all the, sorry, SE3 is all the smartwatch you need. It really, as the bargain basement entry point into Apple's suite of watches, it's really quite a nice entry point. Like, that is not a compromised device. That is a genuinely nice watch at a really very affordable price for Apple's range. So I think this is a very compelling entry point for a lot of people. As well as there being bold colours on the frames of the Series 11, there are also quite a lot, actually, of new Apple Watch bands. Many new colours and styles, including some excruciatingly expensive stuff from that French fashion company that Apple partner with. Apple always do this in spring and autumn. They release new bands and new colours. If you're in the need of an extra band, now is a good time to have a new look at the new range and see if any of those colours are your colours. Moving on then to the iPhones. All of the iPhones have the same or have an A19 chip. And something which didn't get any time in the keynote, but certainly caught my eye, is that Apple have put a substantial amount of hardware into those A19 chips to boost their security. It's something called memory integrity enforcement. It really is a big deal in terms of making it much harder to successfully exploit the inevitable software bugs that always exist in anything coded up by humans. And it's even more likely if we start having more AI, right, there'll be more bugs. So, you know, software is going to have bugs. Those bugs can lead to security compromises, but this new hardware level protection against memory corruption really dents the damage that vulnerabilities are likely to do in the future. It's likely to make it much, much, much more difficult for greyware, spyware and stuff to get hold of modern iPhones. And that is on all of the new iPhones, not just the Pros. So that is, I think, a big deal. Apple are also moving into making their own, so wireless, not as in cellular, chips. The N1 chip, which is basically giving you Apple-provided Wi-Fi and Bluetooth connectivity. This is, I think, good for Apple to bring their silicon expertise here. We're seeing it in all of these new phones, but I think you can also expect to start seeing it in the Macs and the iPads as well. And in sort of related news, all of these new watches and phones can talk to satellites, and in theory, we should really be paying for that feature by now. We were promised it for a year when it was announced, and I think it was extended last year, and it's been extended again. So if you have free iPhone satellite connectivity, you still have free iPhone connectivity, and new users get free iPhone connectivity. Jumping into the iPhone 17, the base model, and the most notable thing, I think, is the center stage camera. So they've basically made the sensor a big square and added the intelligence so that you can have it sort of use a subset of that square as the camera to track you around and to allow you to flip between portrait and landscape orientation without having to turn your phone, which is very nice, I think. If you want a bit more detail, the Mac Observer have a good breakdown of the new camera in the iPhone 17. My sort of summary on it is quoting from the Mac Observer, specs sound nice, but the real win is everyday use. Photos taken at night look cleaner without the grain that older iPhones struggle with. Motion blur is reduced, so kids, pets, or street scenes come out sharp. Your videos feel steadier, making it easier to capture moments without extra gear. That is what, you know, regular folk who buy the iPhone not Pro want from their camera, so that's great. Looking at various reviews, Apple's base iPhone 17 grows up with a better screen and improved cameras. Screen and camera upgrades make iPhone 17 Apple's best base model ever. And Apple Insider's review roundup is simply the best iPhone for almost everyone. It is a very solid base model. The iPhone 17 Pro then got an awful lot of TLC. So basically the headline from Apple Insider, iPhone 17 Pro is here with hugely improved cooling and unibody frame. Yeah, vapor chamber. That's pretty cool. As Ars Technica put in their headline, Apple started from scratch to design all new iPhone 17 Pro and Pro Max. Mac observers say iPhone 17 Pro only comes in three colors, no black or white. Yeah, but there is a really cool orange and a fairly decent dark blue and a gray. I think it's called silver. Looks great to me. The iPhone 17 price goes up by $100, but the base storage doubles. Also, if you really want to throw money at it, you can have 2 terabytes in an iPhone 17 Pro Max. They also have better screens. Ceramic Shield 2, nice story in the show notes detailing that. But really, the important point is this second generation is engineered to solve two biggest real-world complaints about smartphone screens. Scratches and glare. Apple have also announced Final Cut Camera 2, which adds support for ProRes RAW and Genlock. These are very nerdy things that are important to people making high-end films that will be edited together with lots of different angles and stuff from lots of different cameras. If you want to understand that, there's a very good article on the Mac Observer, All Filmmaker Features Explained, and that really tells you why it is important to a lot of people that you have ProRes RAW and Genlock. Apple have also, so we've gone with a unibody design, and that unibody is not titanium. Now, I really like the finish of titanium. I much preferred it to the stainless steel of older iPhones Pro. I also really liked the lightness of the titanium, but it's gone because one of the problems with titanium is it's not really very good at dissipating heat, and the Pro phones need to do that because we make them work very hard. So if you want to understand why, the Mac Observer have a good article on why Apple traded titanium for aluminium. I'll just quote them for a moment. Here's the deal. The A19 Pro chips are clearly built for sustained performance, not just flashy peak speeds. To keep that thing humming during a long 4K ProRes shoot or a heavy gaming session, you have to get heat out. And let's be real, titanium is an insulator. It looks cool, but it traps heat. Aluminium, on the other hand, is fantastic at heat dissipation. Much to my surprise, when iFixit teared it down, its repairability score wasn't actually too bad. It was actually, strangely enough, marginally less repairable than the iPhone Air we're about to talk about, but still got a repairability score of 7 out of 10. A few years ago, iPhones were like 2 out of 10, or maybe 3. They really were getting dinged very badly. So 7 out of 10 ain't too bad. Looking at some reviews, 2 weeks with the iPhone 17 Pro, best of the best, is what the Mac Observer had to say. There is a fantastic detailed review of the new cameras over on Lux.camera. That is a really good article, but it takes a lot of reading. It's a long read. Excellent, though. Apple iPhone 17 Pro review from Ars Technica. Come for the camera, stay for the battery. And Cults of Mac said, iPhone 17 Pro is a powerhouse without functional compromise. In terms of the review roundup from Apple Insider then, fast, excellent, and orange. I ordered an orange iPhone Pro Max. It arrived. I haven't yet gone through the work of transferring over to it, so it's sitting in its box looking at me. But for the first time ever, it's a Pro phone with an opinionated colour. A shouty, loud, opinionated colour. I love it. And actually, I've seen a few non-Apple press release photos of the blue, and I'm mildly surprised at how nice the blue looks too. But I've been bitten so often by supposedly blue phones from Apple that I didn't dare, so I didn't. Finally then, we have the iPhone Air being announced. This is Apple's thinnest iPhone ever with titanium build. Oh look, they haven't got rid of it, they've just moved it. A19 Pro and a $999 starting price. That's how the Mac Observer summarized it. As soon as we saw how thin this was, everyone, Bendgate. Apple were very quick to say no. And in interviews with journalists, they would do things like throw the phone out at the journalist and say, yeah, yuck, you have a go. These things are robust. The best example of quite how robust they are is the good old jerry-rig everything on YouTube. And yeah, it's a robust device. That titanium, it may not be great at dissipating heat, but this is not a pro number cruncher. This is a small, light, strong phone. And titanium is great for that. And yeah, titanium is indeed great for that. That is an extremely strong phone. Also, repairable. Despite being unbelievably thin, it's also very repairable. Another 7 out of 10 from iFixit. And a particularly cool feature is that the whole thing is basically as thin as it's possible to be while still having a USB-C port that functions. And even on that, it's really pushing the limit. So that USB-C port has become ultra thin without being a weak point on the phone by being 3D printed in titanium. That's pretty bloody cool. The MagSafe battery has also been resurrected to give up to 40 hours of use for the iPhone Air. Now, what's actually kind of cool, and it's now been taken apart, it is literally the exact same part as the battery inside the phone itself. So it is literally a second iPhone Air battery in a little special case. As soon as I heard that Apple had done a new MagSafe, I was like, yes, great. But that was very short-lived because it really is designed to fit with that iPhone Air. It physically doesn't fit around other phones because it is an iPhone Air battery just wrapped in a slightly different box. And since the iPhone Air is mostly just its battery, well, you know, means it doesn't fit in anything but an iPhone Air. It's a pity, but hey. Now, as soon as everyone saw how thin it was, and as soon as everyone saw that the battery life would obviously be less than what they're advertising on the Pro and regular models. By the way, notice iPhone Air, not iPhone 17 Air. Just a little subtlety. And initially everyone was like, oh my God, the battery's going to be terrible. And it must be terrible because Apple have released a MagSafe MagSafe battery pack for it. Well, think about that a little bit more. So I think Cult of Mac summed this up very well because they compared it to, well, actually, what did we used to think was normal? So if you look at the video playback and those other ratings Apple give, well, the Air lasts 35% longer than the iPhone 14 and the iPhone 15, which we never thought were terrible phones. It also lasts 17% longer than the 14 Pro and 15 Pro. Now, I am, and for the next day or so, a 15 Pro Max user. I would never say the 15s are terrible on battery life. So if you're lasting 17% longer than a 15 Pro, well, hang on a sec. That's actually not that compromised. The camera is also different to the other models because it's one camera. So Mac Observer have a good explanation. The Air replaces multiple visible lenses with a unified 48 megapixel fusion camera that uses sensor level tricks and heavy image processing to give you flexible framing, reliable low light shots, and pro grade video in a thinner chassis. So yes, it can't do all the tricks you can do when you have two or three lenses, but it can still do a lot because they're given the absolute best single lens camera they can, and Apple really are very good at cameras, so even though it is compromised when you compare it to bigger iPhones, for being such a stupendously thin and elegant device, it does extremely well. So I actually think this is a very forward-looking device. And my personal feeling is that for people who do not need high-end pro cameras or high-end pro performance, and who do like having a bigger screen, but also like not having so much bulk to carry around, I think this is actually a very compelling device. Now, I know the nerds think it's a silly device because it doesn't really do very well on stats. I think it's actually going to be quite a successful device. I think Cult of Mac's review sort of caught my eye because their headline is, if you touch an iPhone Air, you'll want to buy it immediately. And I really do expect that to be the case. In terms of the review roundup from Apple Insider, slim but not perfect. Yeah, it's a little lukewarm. I think Cult of Mac are onto something. I think this thing is going to be phone user nip. We shall see. Apple also announced some accessories, tech woven cases, bumper cases, clear cases, and a whole bunch of new colours for the silicone cases. A rather cool crossbody strap, which I have ordered and does look rather nice. And the Beats 17 Pro kickstand case. was also announced, which is actually kind of interesting looking. And even though they didn't have a section in the keynote marked Apple Intelligence, because, well, that would be rather embarrassing for them, there was actually quite a bit of Apple Intelligence peppered throughout. So if you want a sort of a little collection of all of that together, the Mac Observer have a nice overview. You know, it's interesting. Apple Intelligence wasn't called out by Apple, but it was kind of ever-present. In terms of overall analysis, then, I'm going to leave the final word here on this story to Six Colors, to Jason Snell specifically. This year, Apple is more or less abandoning ProMotion and Always-On as iPhone Pro differentiators. That means habitual buyers of lower-end phones will get a real substantial improvement when they next upgrade their phones. Apple has also chosen not to skimp on its new selfie camera. Similarly, the base iPhone's ultra-wide camera joins its main camera at 48 megapixels. The big camera difference between the regular and Pro models really is the lack of a third telephoto lens. Apple doesn't like to just come out and say, "Welp, prices are higher now." The company places an inordinate amount of pride on releasing upgraded products at identical price points. But this year, it raised iPhone prices. Sort of. Kind of. Start with the iPhone Air, which begins at $999. A slot that was previously occupied by the iPhone Pro and a full $100 more expensive than the old iPhone Plus, which it's replacing in the product line. Then there's the iPhone 17 Pro, which now starts at $1099, up from $999, starting price introduced with the iPhone X. Apple has gone to great lengths to point out that the $1099 price is the same as a similarly configured 16 Pro last year, i.e. if you bumped the storage. But because the iPhone 17 Pro has 256 gigs base and the iPhone Pro started at 128, is the only reason that's true. Our final main story then is the actual release of Apple's new operating systems that we learned about at WWDC early in the summer. There is already the first bug fix out. The various 26.0.1 versions are out for everyone, so maybe with that first set of bug fixes out, more of you will feel more comfortable upgrading. You're not being forced to yet. Apple are still doing security updates to the older OSs for quite some time, so no hurry. But honestly, with the exception of this one computer that I use for podcasting, I have upgraded everything. I have not had any showstoppers, and on the whole, I'm really quite enjoying the new updates. I'm not at all sorry I moved, and I'm looking forward to moving this podcasting machine too. If you're looking for a big one-stop shop, zoomed out, big picture overview of the whole kit and caboodle, the Mac Observer have a great article. Apple brings 200 document changes across iOS 26, iPadOS 26, and macOS Tahoe. Another point of note that spans the whole gamut is the improved parental controls that Apple announced in this spring. And they needed developers to do some stuff. Well, developers have had their time, and with the release of these OSs, that is now out there. There are links in the show notes to Apple's press release on the matter and the Apple Insider summary if you are a parent of kids and would like to start making use of this new functionality. In terms of Liquid Glass, then, which is another unifying thing across all of these OSs, there's been a lot of pixels spilt over this, a lot of very shouty hot takes. I'm not particularly interested in very shouty hot takes. I'm only going to link to one piece of analysis on this, which is a long read, but an excellent long read. Basically, it is the most considered critique that I have read on the topic. That is over on PXL, on Pixel Envy, pxlnv.com, which is Pixel Envy. So moving on then to looking into each OS in turn, I'm going to be a little bit brief on this. I've just realized this, we're an hour long show and I'm only in my last main story. But yeah, like I said, September is the opposite of the silly season. So starting with Vision OS 26, spatial widgets add new dimension to Apple Vision Pro. Really, that's the biggest feature. Maybe the next most significant feature is a really quite nice improvement on the rendering of the personas. Basically, AI gotten better there. If you're looking for a detailed description, there's a link in the show notes to a good summary from Cult of Mac. In terms of reviews, then, we have Apple Insider headlining their review with "A Necessary Evolution in Need of New Hardware." Just a choice quote here. Apple made several quality of life upgrades on to how Vision OS works and presents itself to users. Apple Vision Pro isn't being held back by the M2, but the edge cases are starting to show up. And over on Mac Stories, then, we have the summary. Vision OS keeps the rapid development going with a ton of new features, improvements, and capabilities that make Vision Pro even more powerful and enjoyable to use. Still don't even have the option to buy one in Ireland. I still think I probably would because I'm silly, but, you know, silly/curious/nerdy. But I don't, so I'm afraid I can't use this. Zero first-hand information on this. Another OS that I don't yet have because my Apple TV hasn't bothered updating itself and I haven't been bothered forcing it to. Apple TV OS 26 is out. The summary from Apple Insider. Now with karaoke mode redesign, a big and big sound upgrades. In terms of reviews, high on polish, light on new features for Apple TV is what Apple Insider had to say. That really does kind of sum it up. Basically, if you're into hi-fi audio nerdery, there are some nice new features in there. It gets Apple, it gets liquid glass. Apparently a few things are laid out a bit better. Okay, like I say, when my telly updates, I guess I'll find out, but it doesn't seem to be anything particularly dramatic. Also not particularly dramatic is watchOS 26. Yes, it has liquid glass and it is getting these new health tools, so the sleep tracking and the hypertension detection for older models is coming as part of watchOS 26. But that's kind of it, right? And the liquid glass is really very, very superficial on the Apple Watches. It's like, well, we did a token. We haven't really redesigned very much, but we had to do something. The other big feature is Workout Buddy. That's going to be a real Marmite feature. You're going to love it or hate it. Best review is from Mac Stories. I'm just going to, you know, choice quote here. Liquid glass on Apple Watch is fine. It's not adding anything useful, nor is it taking anything away. The Smart Stack is gaining even more utility in the form of Smart Stack hints, which appear as small icons on the bottom of your watch face. And as someone who doesn't use or doesn't change the watch faces, I set one up and I bought my watch and I kept it because I have the Apple Watch Ultra 2 with the screen with the most possible complications crammed into it, and they're all full, and I wish I had room for even more. And really, the only thing that I'm really noticing is, oh, look, every now and then things look mildly glassy. And I get these little hints coming up at the bottom when there's something cool happening in the stack. Okay, it's nice. I mean, it's not a bad update. I'm not sorry for 1 second I updated, but it's not like, oh, wow, I updated. Isn't that amazing? It just sort of is. Let's move along then to macOS 26 Tahoe. The short summary from Apple Insider. macOS Tahoe with liquid glass, clipboard history and more is now available. If you want the ultimate overview, if you want to actually understand every new feature and how well and how badly it performs, there's a really good list of everything that's changed over on Cult of Mac. Everything new in macOS 26 Tahoe, Supercharged Spotlight and 40 other features. I think the feature of most note here is that another feature which we have for years had to get from third-party apps is now available in basic form to everyone. And I think there's going to be a case where people who have their clipboard managers from third parties, they're not going to move because those third-party clipboard managers are very fancy-pants nerdy apps that do really powerful stuff. Just like as a 1Password user, I didn't immediately think, oh great, I'll get rid of 1Password and move to the Apple Passwords app. No, no, no. By Apple joining the club with a base model, they're not taking away from the power users who were already using third-party apps. What they're doing is giving an option to regular users who would never go with a third-party app. The password manager built into Apple's OS is used by the kind of people who never would have splashed out on 1Password or LastPass or any of these kind of things. And I think the same is true here. I think the people who are very fond of their clipboard managers ain't going to change nothing. But everyone else who's never had the inclination to get a clipboard manager all of a sudden has a pretty darn decent starting point just in the OS, and I think that's really good. There is also just Spotlight having gotten some TLC. That's one of those features that over time I'm probably going to end up becoming really dependent on. Right now, like I say, this podcasting Mac doesn't have it yet, and one of my work Macs is too old to get Tahoe. It's still getting security updates, but it can't have Tahoe because it's an Intel Mac. And that means that I'm not really going to get fully immersed in that new Quick Look Spotlight bar until I have it everywhere, because if I become too dependent on it, I'm going to get really, really, really cranky when I'm using my work laptop, and that's not good. Something else that I really, really, really don't care about, but if you're the kind of person who still has some FireWire accessories, do bear in mind support has been removed from macOS 26 Tahoe. Now, given that the older Intel machines can't run Tahoe, and this is probably a very small subset of people affected by this, probably using some sort of a dongle. Also, there is a new repair assistant to help you with parts collaboration and pairing if you do your own repairs, or if you're a third-party repair shop repairing a Mac. So again, that's all good. Jumping over then to reviews, by far the most detailed review in a million miles, which literally deep dives into absolutely every nook and cranny of the OS, is the amazing Mac Stories review at macstories.net. It's the kind of review where I would say you go to the index page and you jump around to the bits that you actually care about, because it's not the kind of review you're just going to read all of. If you're looking for a detailed but not quite as detailed review, then Ars Technica always give a good overview. Again, quite detailed, but they have section headings for jumping around. And they also, you know, so again, I would recommend those two as the best reviews for the detail. Apple Insider then have a much, much shorter review that is easy, that everyone can just read all of. Their headline is, "A strong update, just not for the reasons you expect." The choice quote here for me is, "Liquid Glass will briefly startle you. But then it's new features in macOS Tahoe that make this a significant and significantly useful upgrade." You even very, very soon wonder how you put up with the old macOS. The new one is so much better. Six Colors also have a nice shorter read review. I will again quote you from the review. macOS 26 Tahoe is two things at once. It's the broadest and most productivity focused update for macOS in years, while also taking collateral damage from Apple's broader design ambitions on its other platforms. If you're worried about upgrading to macOS 26 Tahoe because of Apple's liquid glass design, don't be. It's mostly a minor reskin that doesn't really change how the Mac works. I have found macOS Tahoe to be perfectly usable, and there are moments of beauty separated by long stretches of banality. I love that phrasing. It sure feels like Apple is building a new vision of how the menu bar works, with old school menu bar extras joined by individual controls as well as user created submenus full of controls. What you should consider, though, are the ways that macOS Tahoe offers new power features for Mac users. The new Spotlight features, including clipboard history, are huge. Shortcuts, automations, and access to AI models open up all sorts of new possibilities. The new control center suggests that Apple has figured out how to embrace menu bar management for the first time. Like I say, I'm using it on some of my Macs. I like it. I'm not leaning in nearly as heavily as I could until I get all of my Macs over. Moving on then to iOS 26, the biggest of the OSs, of course. Apple releases iOS 26 with liquid glass and more intelligence, is the headline Apple Insider put on it. Everything new in iOS 26, liquid glass and 70 plus new features, is a good detailed overview from Cult of Mac. If you want something a little more bite-sized, there's a fun video tour of some of the most notable features from Joanna Stern from the World Street Journal. That's posted on YouTube and linked in the show notes. Personally, for me, the most notable change, apart from the liquid glass, is the rather substantially redesigned camera app. It's a big change, but it's not for the worse, and nothing has gone away. It's just been reorganized, and I would say better organized. If you want a little more help with that, Mac Observer have a good article on how the camera app changed. There's also new photographic styles, which are being added to older iPhones. So these photographic styles came along with the iPhone 17 and 17 Pro, but the 16 Pro gets them too. Actually, I'm not sure the iPhone 17 gets it now that I think about it. It may just be the 17 Pro. Either way, the iPhone 16, oh no, that means the Pro must get it. The 17 must get it too. Anyway, the iPhone 16 gets a play along too, if you install iOS 26. Another big thing is the preview app has finally arrived on iOS. I think this is useful on the iPhone, but really useful on the iPad. More details linked in the show notes on Mac Observer. Also, finally, it's not impossible to add free ringtones. Details linked in the show notes from Apple Insider. Boarding Pass live activities look pretty cool, actually. But unfortunately, we're not going to get all that coolness until the airlines update their apps to use the new APIs. And again, quite a bit of Apple intelligence dotted around, and Apple even released a press release saying new Apple intelligence features are available today. I think probably visual intelligence is the biggest of these. This gives you the power that you've had just from intelligence on photos is now available on all images, including screenshots. And Apple are relying a lot on Google for that. It's something Mac Observer report. There's also call screening, which basically means that when someone calls from an unknown number, you have the option of letting your iPhone's AI answer the call and ask the person what they want, and then give you a text transcript of what it is the person wants, and then you can choose to answer the call. I turned this on and it seems to work pretty well, because the only text I'm getting is people going, oh, never mind, fine, great, thanks for not disturbing me, I like it. There's also Hold Assist, which uses AI to detect while you're on hold and basically phone you back when you come off hold. It's not perfect, but people are saying they're finding it useful. There's also Adaptive Power Mode to help you basically stretch your battery life without you losing notable functionality. And the Mac Observer point out that Siri just got 5 secret iOS upgrades and they're actually useful. I had a look. There's nothing dramatic, but a nice little quality of life update. So link in show notes. And of course, Apple Foundation Models framework is now available, so apps can tap into those neural engines and use Apple's models. So there's a whole bunch of new APIs that will start to make apps be able to do AI in a privacy-preserving way on iOS, which I think is going to become quite useful over time. Jumping on then to reviews, again, the feature-by-feature update you want is iOS and iPadOS 26, the Mac Stories review. It's 19 pages. 19 pages! But again, it's got an index, and it really is the whole kit and caboodle. It really is everything going on in there, and I always love that Mac Stories take the time to do these. Again, I didn't read every word of it, because it's very long, 19 pages, but anything I was interested in, I was able to get the skinny on very quickly, and, you know, it's a good review. Some other reviews, iOS 2016, a practical yet powerful update is Ars Technica's summary. And Ars Technica actually did two reviews. They also did a separate one for power users where they focus on reminders, preview and a few other features. Apple Insider then say, iOS 26, smart, glassy, but waiting on Siri. Choice quote here. Siri delays haunt an otherwise excellent upgrade. Liquid glass is an aesthetic that works well, and Apple has clearly worked hard to perfect it. Expect more tweaks in the future as Apple deals with the inevitable complaints, but it's landed in a good position for the operating system's release. Overall, iOS 26 is a great update for most users. And I have to say, in my experience, the OS where where Liquid Glass is most at home is definitely iOS. You really do feel that this is where Apple put their heart and soul into Liquid Glass, and I like it. I really do like it here. It's superficial on the Mac, really superficial on the watch, but it really sings in iOS 26, in my opinion. Six Colors review, Darren Moran, the headline, Through a Glass Liquidly. Interesting title, I thought that was fun. But again, the choice quote is, worth noting that almost all of iOS 26's features that Apple demoed during its WWDC keynote this year are available in this initial release. So we're not getting that usual coming later. And his summary then, overall, iOS 26's quality of life improvements are what are likely to resonate the most. I think he's right. It's Lots of nice little tweaks to make the OS just a little bit more helpful, a little bit more useful. Personally, for me, actually, the AirPlay screen has gotten so much better. Instead of having to tap on a speaker to get the details to control the volume, you now have one single purpose display for all of your different speakers, which shows the volume setting. And as you tap to select the speaker and slide the volume, all in that one control instead of having to expand it first. And for speakers with a battery, the battery indication is just in there as a little subscript. And for the AirPods, it's actually even cleverer. It tells you not just the battery of the AirPods, but also of the case. It's just really handy to have that just right there for you. Like if you use Bluetooth headphones or AirPods or HomePods, etc. It's just really nice that AirPlay dialogue has gotten so much nicer. So it's full of those little accommodations to make your life a little bit easier that I, for one, am really enjoying iOS 26. Now, iOS 26 sort of extends its tentacles into other places. So one of the things that changes when you update your iOS is how your AirPods work. And so there are some notable changes. Full listing linked in the show notes from the Mac Observer. I think the most notable features are the live translation for the older AirPods Pro 2, 3, and obviously the new AirPods 4. Better playback control, including automatic sleep detection, and better control over when audio switches to other devices. I think that's going to make a lot of people's crankiness with the headphones a little bit less. And then also you can use your AirPods as a camera control, basically a remote shutter. It's off by default, but I think it's kind of a useful feature, especially for group shots and stuff. So I've toggled it on. I think it's quite a nice touch. And Apple have also tweaked some of the audio codecs, particularly they say for call quality and recording. So that's interesting. Another screen that iOS projects to is CarPlay. And CarPlay really did get a lot of TLC with iOS 26. I haven't had a chance to do a big road trip, but I did spend 20 minutes this morning in my car just playing around with it, setting up the, you know, rearranging my home screens and setting up the widgets and just playing around just to see what's changed. And A, it looks so much better. B, it's so much more really well usable and you don't have to use the widgets if you don't want to. The fact that some of the widgets let you tap them to do things, I think is actually useful, but it's the kind of thing, like there are things you do in your car when you are stopped, and there are things you do in your car when you're driving. Interacting with widgets is in the former and not the latter of those two categories. Now, in my car, CarPlay is off on the center console and not on the driver's screen. So for me, there is absolutely no danger that I'm going to be distracted by the CarPlay stuff, because when I'm driving, I'm looking at my driver screen, not my infotainment screen. But it does mean that the better half in the passenger seat can really control my iPhone way more powerfully, way better than I can. And when I'm pulled over, you know, getting up a few electrons in the battery or getting a coffee or whatever, I can do a lot more from that nice, big, generous screen instead of having to whip my phone out. So I'm very happy with it. I know some people are worried it may have safety implications. I know it won't for me, but people aren't always responsible. So I don't know if Apple have gone too far on this one. I'm hoping people will, you know, not drive like idiots just because hypothetically they could. We shall see. On the whole, I think it's a really nice update. Some links in the show notes to detailed reviews from Mac Stories, and I think actually the Mac Observer have a good one. Of note, I guess, are the video streaming feature as well, and of course CarPlay widgets. And then another place where iOS has a second persona, although it's now officially branded as a separate OS, but basically everything we've talked about pretty much in iOS 26 is also in iPadOS 26. But iPadOS 26 has a whole bunch of extra superpowers. And I think sort of the headlines from Apple Insider and the Mac Observer encapsulated pretty well. iPadOS 26 arrives with controversial liquid glass and Mac-like multitasking. Or Apple launches iPadOS 26 with major productivity upgrades. That new take on managing multiple windows, if you're a pro-level iPhone or iPad user, particularly if you have one of the really cool keyboard and trackpad docks from Apple or from anyone else, it's a nice upgrade. I actually upgraded my iPad before I upgraded anything else because my My iPad is my least critical device in terms of me not getting important things done. If it all goes to hell in a handcart, it didn't go anywhere near hell in anything vaguely resembling a handcart. It was a really nice upgrade. I was really happy with it, and then I updated my phone a few days later. I'm absolutely loving it. I'm finding it perfect. I'll give Jason Snell the last word on this in his lovely review, which he has titled iPadOS 26, a computer? ? I think that actually is kind of the key question. Anyway, quoting Jason, it's like a weight has been lifted from the soul of the iPad. It remains a very nice device to use in full screen mode with all the simplicity attendant to that mode. But via a single tap, it can also transform into a multi-window, multitasking device that's appropriate for the Mac class hardware underpinning today's iPads. Amen, Jason. Amen. Jason continues, Apple's new windowing system is great, embracing all the things that make the Mac work without forcing it on people who don't want it. The improvements to files, support for local recording, and the new background tasks live activity help create an iPad that just feels more ready for professional productivity tasks. I'm not doing any of the latter, apart from obviously the multitasking. But yeah, it does feel, it has not lost any of the amazing simplicity that makes the iPad the perfect device for so many of my non-technical family members. And for me, the computer nerd power user that I am, it has become so much more of what it always had the potential to be. And it's done so in a way that I find a lot less compromising the approach Microsoft took with Windows. So, yes, it's taken Apple a while to figure this multitasking thing out. I would say you could argue this is their third really big try at this. The first try was basically, no, you can't. Their second try was slide over and side by side, which are useful. The third, actually it's their fourth go, I guess. Well, let's not count the zero. Zero is none at all. One is slide over and side by side. And take two then was main stage or stage manager, whatever that was called, that I never used and never liked, neither on the Mac nor the iPad. And now we have this, and this works for me. I mean, maybe you'll be cranky, but for me, oh yeah, nicely done, Apple. Nicely done. Ooh, aren't we in for a long show? Let's wrap it up with some quick stories that made the news in September 2025. Apple have refreshed their Beats lineup with PowerBeats Fit. According to Cult of Mac, they are compact new PowerBeats Fit earbuds add comfort and durability. In terms of reviews, we have compact earbuds ideal for workouts from Apple Insider. People seem to like them. Adobe has brought their Premiere video editing app to the iPhone, is what their headline says, what Adobe's press releases say. But actually, it's iPhone and iPad. And I think on the iPad is much, much, much bigger news. But I guess there's a lot more iPhone users, so they leaned into that. But yeah, the iPad too. Apple has also launched a new project to protect and restore California redwood forests. You know, given how they like to name their OSs after California nice things, that's a good thing. And put a pin in your calendar if you're the kind of person who cares about such things. Apple's fourth quarter 2025 earnings call will take place on October the 30th. So if you want to watch or listen, rather, you can. Or if you'd prefer to have me summarize it with a bit of snark, you can do that by tuning into Let's Months, Let's Talk Apple. With that, let us wrap up this month's very long show. I have been your host, Bart Bouchotz. Before I go, I want to say thank you very much to everyone who supports the show. You may have noticed that despite being a very long show, you were not subjected to any ads. You also, for better or for worse, got my honest and unvarnished opinion because I have no sponsors to keep happy. I think it is an amazing luxury to be able to do this kind of honest podcasting, but that luxury entirely depends on the support of listeners like you. So there are many ways you can support the show, and I always say to people that I know the world here is not in a good place, and I know a lot of you listening are not in a position where you can just throw your hard-earned money at random podcasters on the internet, especially not ones who only give you some new content once a month. But you can still support the show by spreading the word, because there is a pretty standard percentage. I think, generally speaking, podcasters hope if we can get like 1% of our listeners to support us financially, we're doing amazing. Well, the more people there are, the more there are to get that 1% from. So every time you spread the word about this podcast, you really are genuinely helping this show. So please share the word with your friends, with your, well, maybe not with your family, unless they're Apple geeks too. Social media, you name it, it really helps. Then, of course, if you are in a position to support the show financially, I do kind of really appreciate that, because while I am happy to give completely free of charge vast wadges of my time, I'm not really in a place where I want to financially have this cost me money. So I'm trying to run Let's Talk on a break-even basis. There are bills every month. I get income from you amazing folks every month. And the ideal is that one cancels out the other, or balances out the other. I'm not 100% in balance. We're still a little bit underwater since the Patreon changes and stuff. A year and a half, nearly 2 years ago now. We're not in trouble, but it would be nice to finish out 2025 with, you know, things being fully in balance. So if a few of you have been on the fence, now's not a bad time to sign up on Patreon, or to make a one-off donation, which I can use to do cool things like keep my software up to date, keep my hardware up to date, and also every now and then when there's enough money in the pot, I splash out a bit, and I do things to make the podcast a little bit more professional, like the amazing new audio labeling and stuff that I got about a year ago now. And if you're very attentive, you may have noticed there's some nice new album artwork leaning into my modern Bartificer Creations branding. I did like my old logo, but it felt completely out of touch with my current branding for everything else I do. So the amazing, amazing people at the Icon Factory have a little bit more of my money, and I have a lot more of their expertise, and we all have some extremely nice new podcast logos, and the website is a train wreck. It's going to stay a train wreck until January, when I intend to rewrite the darn thing from scratch. And when I do, it will be rebranded to match the lovely new logos, etc. So for now, you're just going to see the new logo in iTunes. But you'll start to see it in more places over time. I am extremely happy with it. I was very sad to hear the Icon Factory were struggling to stay afloat. So I reached out and I went, look, you guys do amazing creative work. I actually have a few little projects I've had on the back burner for a while. Maybe you can offer me some services from this menu of possibilities in exchange for a little bit of my money. And they were like, well, actually, we'd love to help you with your logos. And I was like, great. So we did. And they're really nice people to work with. The whole creative process was a joy. And I really like where we've ended up. Okay, I hadn't really planned on this being a plug for the Icon Factory, given it's been such a long show. It's supposed to be a plug for me. Show notes. Long, detailed, very long, very detailed show notes this month at letstalk.ie, the aforementioned train wreck of a website. These are links to all of the stories that have informed my thinking on this month's Apple News. If you wonder how much effort I put into preparing for these shows, see all of those links? All of those little blue underline things? I've read them all. And more. These are just the best of what I've read. And all of that information gets mushed into my little brain, and then what you hear is what comes out as a result. For better or for worse. As I say, my unvarnished opinion, because we have no sponsors, etc., etc. I have been your host, Bart Bouchotz. You can find me at bartb.ie. Another train wreck of a website in need of some TLC. Also, that has new logos ready to go that are waiting for a website to put them in. Ooh, that's a pattern here. Yeah, if only there were 25 hours in the day. Okay, sorry, I really am ending the show now. I've been your host, Bart Bouchotz. You can find me at bartb.ie. Until next time, happy computing.